Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time for Race Chat Live with Chris Creighton and Craig Moore.
All right. Hey, everybody. Chris, you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. Sure am.
What'd you think about that intro, brother?
I like it. I like it a lot.
I got to order.
For the first time in Race Chat Live history, we had an actual intro that said the host's name. The first time, Mr. CJ Sports, he's had him an intro, but I don't think me and Steve ever had an intro either, so this is quite an exciting experience to be able to have an actual intro when we come on to the air. A lot of big things in store tonight, Mr. Craig Moore. We've got a lot of time. A long way to go and a short time to get there.
So we better get going.
Well, yeah, I think our first guest is going to call in at 7:05, Dave Smoot.
He is already in the studio.
Yeah, that's great. So let's go ahead and get this show shared around. Craig Moore, if you want to open up on some quick news and stuff, I'm going to try to get the show shared as quickly as possible, and then let you know when I'm ready to come back.
All right, brother. All right, well, folks, you're listening to Race Chat Live on Blog Talk Radio in the 110 Nation of Sports. And I know that we got CJ in the studio with us, and I know we got some sponsors. But here's what we're going to talk about after we get done talking about with our guest tonight, Dave Smoot from, we got a battle of North and South. Let's just put it that way. Mr. Dave Smoot is from the Florida, and then we at 8:30, 8:35, we're going to have Andrew Millard, who is in my neck of the woods. So we're going to have the South represented first, and then we're going to have the North represented later. We're not going to say which one is the better of the two. That war was figured out a long time ago. But
I know we have better weather. That's for sure.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
Yes, you do, but you're still like us, you're quarantined. So, but we're going to talk about the iRacing thing, and actually it was funny, I was listening to, real quick before we bring Dave in, before we get Dave on here, I was listening to the Godfather, Dave Moody, a little while ago, and the question was brought up as to why NASCAR had changed, and we brought this up last week, about why NASCAR had changed the time of their viewing for races. And it was for the partners, and they figured we could mow our grass after the races got off the air. So, before the races got on the air. So that way we could try to stay awake. But from the iRacing adventure last week had 1 million viewers. Now, part of that makes me wonder, and I didn't listen to what they said, but part of it makes me wonder as to why. Was it the lure that it was on network television? It was something we've never seen before. The fact that there's no sports on whatsoever, except for in the state of Florida, they're going to run the Florida Stakes, I guess, this weekend or next, which is horse racing. But it had 1 million viewers, and this week, I believe it's from Texas Motor Speedway. And so it should be interesting. It's going to be on at 1:30 again. But I didn't get a chance to cover it last week. I had a wedding meeting via the computer.
Oh, so they're going to do it again this week?
They're going to do it this week again.
Hells yes.
So I know CJ was excited about it. I was watching the feed because it was coming up on my feed as I was doing my wedding consult, deciding if we were going to stick with the date or we were going to move it to next year. So, because it ain't my wedding, so if they want to get married next year, that's fine.
Yeah, I have a feeling, and not to get too far off subject, but I made a prediction that 46% of the marriages that were proposed that were supposed to be married in this time frame where we've gone to social distancing, I have a feeling 46% of those marriages will never happen because most of them are going to say it's a sign. So,
well, listen, real quick, before we bring Dave in, and I don't know if Dave is married, but I had posted something on the More Q Music page. I believe it was yesterday or today, about how social distancing is a lot like being married. And I'm going to see if I can find it quick, but of course I can't. But
we don't take marriage advice from people who are not married.
Well, I'm married, technically.
You're technically married, okay.
Technically married.
As we are getting further and further off topic, you know, it's been an interesting few weeks. I, myself, was very critical of the iRacing, and I actually found myself watching the presentation. I was okay with it. I wish Dale Jr. would have won. I'm not surprised that a million people tuned in. I think normal viewership is somewhere like 2.5 million or something like that. So, you know, you had a lot of people that were looking for something to watch. And, of course, horse racing was on, and that was a delight to see. So, at least we got some kind of sports going on. Looking probably forward to it to being again this week. I will not tell you the emotional roller coaster that I myself have gone through as I've had sports ripped from my heart the last few weeks. It has been very difficult. But now, you know, it's like quitting cigarettes 3 weeks in, and I feel better about myself. So,
and you're not divorced yet, so Miss Heather must really love you.
I feel like I can go with my life again. But, you know, hey, somebody said something about a chicken burger from Wynot Motorsports Park, and boy, oh boy, that about set me off into a hole, another deep hole again. But we're going to look forward. We're going to move forward. We're going to push forward. We're going to have a positive show. I think that the people that are listening in tonight, they want something positive in their life. We've got a great testimony by one of the drivers that's going to come on here at the top of the hour, Dave Smoot. He knows the ups and downs of racing. You know, and I got into racing probably about 10 years ago. I've loved racing my whole life. I got into the business about 10 years ago. And, you know, I was surprised that a lot of my conversations started with, well, racing can give you the highs of highs, but it also can give you the lows of lows. And that's going to be pretty present here in our first 30 minutes on the air with Dave as he tells us a little bit about his story. And I think that we haven't mentioned this to Dave yet. But if need be, we may have to bring him on again next week if we don't finish the story. So one of our colleagues here at the 110 Nation, to not rush this interview, that from the stuff that we read that he has sent us, that, you know, to kind of let him tell his story. And if we don't get that in the full 30 minutes here, Craig, then hopefully Dave will be willing to join us again either next week or at a later predetermined date. And we can get the rest of the story of Dave. But, you know, without holding him back any further, unfortunately, we have about two people listening in on our Facebook Live. So good job on the introduction, fellas. Y'all really are turning on the race fans here. But we're 3 minutes behind already. So without further ado, let's bring on Dave Smoot. And he needs to tell us all about this guerrilla style and all this. We need to know what is up, Dave Smoot? I have been waiting a long time to have you on. Tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all.
Okay, guys. Well, yeah, that's my name. My name is Dino Dave Smoot, and kind of stole the name Dino from an old school drag racer that was kind of idolized him. I grew up around drag racing a lot out of Long Beach, California, the good old Lions Speedway, and Pomona and stuff like that. And we had a guy, it was an old horse, an old mule that was named Dino Don Nicholson. And I kind of liked the name, the Dino Don, you know, and a couple guys started calling me Dino. And then it went into Dino Dave Smoot. And so, anyways, I started racing, you know, at an early age, you know, pretty much bred for racing. My grandfather was a mechanic, and he always used to take me on go-karts. You know, there's a track that all the drivers used to go to from Ascot Speedway, which was considered America's favorite dirt track. It was ran by
Dave. Let's let the guests know. We said that you were from Alabama. But originally, people can find out real quick that accent's not from Mobile, Alabama.
Right,
where are you originally from, Dave? Since we're starting at the beginning, you're from a small town, California, right?
Right, in Gardena, right outside of Los Angeles. But it was one of the – my home track was Ascot Speedway, where a lot of NASCAR greats started, such as Parnelli Jones. Earnhardt ran there. Then there's some superstars that ran there, such as Chuck Norris. You know, he used to run Demolition Derby cars there. I can keep going on and on, you know, about some of the drivers. Schrader's been there. Labonte's been there. You know, it was truly America's favorite dirt track. We're talking about three or four different events a week, all the way from speedway bikes to AMA, flat track bikes on the half mile. And then we, turned it up a little bit with motocross on Wednesday nights, and then we went into late model street stocks, bombers, figure eight cars on Saturday night, and then the big show of the week was CRA, the California Racing Association sprint cars, with good old guys like Wolfgang, and we had the Casey Luna Ford that was there back in the day, and was standing room only. The Agonjanians, one thing about them, they knew how to put on a show. They knew how to promote the place. And of course we're talking about the population there in the Los Angeles area, a lot greater than some of the tracks that we have here in the South. You know, we're talking about millions of people, but never failed. Racing was a standing room only just about every day of the week at good old Ascot Speedway. That was my hometown, born and raised there. Like I said, my grandfather, he was a mechanic as well as a Los Angeles policeman. He was a plainclothesman. He was a German guy. I'm a little bit mixed up. I'm really mixed up. And that I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm Mexican, German, and black. You know. And so the thing about it is that
Wait a minute. So first of all, you can be very strong with your voice. Germans, of course, and.
Right.
And so you got German, you've got, what was the other?
Mexican, I speak Spanish fluently.
Oh, come on now. Come
for
on,
all
stop.
My amigos. yo hablo español for all my amigos. Matter of fact, we're setting up a taco truck.
And then, hey, of course, African American. So you got a lot of the area covered, but you've never met a stranger either, obviously, we can tell.
Never. I've never met a stranger. Never met a stranger. Get along eyeball to eyeball with anybody. You know, look at anybody eyeball to eyeball, and a man is a man, and I got friends from all walks of life.
So we're starting out at the early beginning. I mean, Dave Smoot, you're in diapers. Right. Okay. So you graduated from the diapers. When was your first race, and what and yeah, let's just go with that. What was your first race, Dave?
Okay, are we talking about cars, motorcycles, mini bikes? What are we talking about?
Oh, man. So it started with something else and it went to dirt track. Tell us about it.
I'll tell you about it, okay? Yeah, I think you guys have heard of the Gilliland family, right?
Oh, of course. Todd and Butch originally, and David, who drove for Robert Yates Race.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Butch was a friend of mine. We worked together at a little lawnmower shop as well as a brake shop in Inglewood, California called Charlie's Brake Shop. And David wasn't even conceived then. Okay. And Butch was just a mechanic. I idolized the guy. You know, he never could stop. He was the kind of guy that was just a totally full-blown workaholic. You know, he started off just like me. We were poor, you know, working out of his house. And he was also in Lawndale, California. Okay. And he was living with his mom. I think his dad had passed. Butch's dad had a Jeep dealership, or Willie's Jeep dealership. And that's what he kind of specialized in. And then later on, in the years, Butch, he continued working at Charlie's Brake Shop, which later ended him up into owning his own Anaheim Brake and Wheel, That's when he was pretty much sponsoring himself as a privateer when he was running the Winston West Series, okay, and he eventually ended up being the champion in that. I believe it was two or three years in a row, 95, 96, maybe 97, right around there. And a lot of fast guys. You know, I always used to go to the races and watch Butch and, you know, following, trying to follow him in his footsteps. You know, I got a couple of chances to race with him in a couple of enduro races at Ascot Speedway. And he told me, just follow me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was my first race in a dang car, you know. And I thought it was going to be easy. It wasn't that easy, but I ended up taking it from the back and ended up in fourth place until I flipped the thing on going into turn three and rolled about four or five times. And yeah, I think Butchie did win that race. And, you know, me and Butch, you know, we went way back. You know, Butch used to race mini bikes, believe it or not. Believe it or not. We started out at a place called Trojan Speedway in Southgate, California. We ran a couple other places, Indian Dunes, which was in way out in California, okay, another place called Saddleback Park. And Butch was pretty much a flat track expert, and then he went into motocross. And, you know, so then, you know, from the mini bikes, we're talking about real mini bikes. We're talking about the Briggs and Stratton 3.5 to maybe 5 horsepower. The same kind of thing that's on your lawnmower, you know, with torque converters on them. And that's what we started racing, you know. And right. it evolved into what it is today. You see where Butch's ended up, you know. He kept it in his blood, you know. David ended up going to NASCAR Cup. Butch never went into NASCAR Cup. He may have ran one or two races in the Craftsman Truck Series, but he was basically breeding David the whole way, the whole time for that. And
I remember Butch in some ARCA and I believe K&N cars, and maybe once or twice an Xfinity, which is, at that time would have been the Busch Grand National.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember Butch racing at good old places like Riverside Speedway and stuff like that. Matter of fact, I was at the very last race. It was called the Pontiac Excitement 500 at Riverside, but Butch, he may have ran that in the Winston West. I really don't remember. But, right. Yeah, David, I ran into Todd and David at Five Flags Speedway at this last Snowball Derby that just passed by. And David ended up breaking, but he was fast. And I get to see the look in Todd's eye. I wish I was in that car. You know, that's the look he had for his dad, that he wished he was in that car for that race. But he's done – Todd, from my understanding, he's done pretty well so far. I think he was one of the youngest drivers to win an ARCA sanctioned event, and you know, I love those guys to death. They're the ones that got me into racing, you know, and they're a true family.
So it started out as gearheads, and then here we are. We're racing dirt track. What brought you to the South, Dave? How did you leave the cozy confines of California and make your way south to Mobile, Alabama, or the surrounding area there?
Well, my life was pretty much what I felt coming to an end. You know, I had been going through some personal problems. You know, I had a big shop out there right down the street from Strop Motorsports shop. Once again, trying to follow Butch. Butch ended up running for Strop Motors, Bill Strop of Strop Motorsports in a Ford. And he was in Long Beach on Cherry Avenue. And so I ended up getting a shop on Cherry Avenue and right in Long Beach. And was keeping my nose clean for a while. I was battling addiction, you know, off and on from an early age. And what happened was, you know, I eventually went really, really deep in it, you know, and got my nose clean for probably about 4 or 5 years, you know, and was sitting at a car show, you know, was specializing in selling GM tune ports and fuel injection components out of my shop, and going out to the Pomona car show and having guys from Australia, Japan, the Netherlands and all kinds of places around the world buying motors from me, motors and transmissions, as well as electrical components. Was a big distributor for Painless Wiring in California. And the bottom line is I was sitting at a car show one day and a guy came up to me and like I said, I believe I had about 3 or 4 years clean time at the time off of drugs and alcohol. And this guy came up to me and he said, hey, Dave, did you and at the time I was just getting, you know, just starting to really get good and hot and heavy into running late models. OK, on the series that was called the started at Ascot, but it was a NASCAR Pacific Coast region, okay, for late models, okay. And so I got a car from a gentleman named Marcus Mallett, which is another black guy, which actually ended up being the true first NASCAR champion out of Ascot Speedway. That's when it was sanctioned by NASCAR, but it was considered the Winston series, okay, and that happened out of good old Agajanian's Ascot Speedway again. But nevertheless, was sitting at a car show, and a guy, a fellow racer, one of these drag racer guys, said he read in an article that he said, hey, Dave, he said, congratulations. I said, what are you congratulating me for? And he said, you were chosen, man. He said, you were chosen as one of the five drivers to run that new deal that they're trying to put together, minority NASCAR team. And I said, well, hell, I didn't know nothing about that. And the bottom line is come to find out that Dr. J, the basketball player, okay, and Joe Washington, which is another black guy that's a Hall of Famer for the Washington Redskins. He was under the reign of Joe Gibbs, that they decided to get their feet wet and wanted to sponsor a car. They wanted to put together a minority NASCAR team because there wasn't very many of us that were out there, but there was a few of us that were able to drive. And what happened was we had flight confirmations to go to New York, hotel accommodations, reservations, and all that kind of good stuff set up. Only thing we didn't have was plane flight tickets. And I got a phone call. Now this is, you know, this is something that was ongoing for several weeks in a row, you know, and other guys were saying, yeah, Dave, you were chosen as one of the guys. It was me, another gentleman by the name of Frank White, I believe his name was, and Marcus Mallett. The other one was Willie T. Yeah, Willie T. Ribs. Everybody remembers Willie T. Ribs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and at the time, I believe Willie T was running for Cosby, you know, and there was another guy out there. I'm not sure if it was Billy Lester or not, but I think it was Billy Lester. Not 100% sure, but I think it was Billy at the time. But anyways, Billy ended up, Lester ended up getting a ride and getting backed up by the good old hotshot Bobby Hamilton, which is no longer with us, you know, and he ended up doing decent in a NASCAR Craftsman truck ride, okay, and that was really it, you know. What happened was me as well as some of those other drivers, we all got a facsimile at the same time, and these guys were talking about a multi-million dollar you know, operation that they're about to get their feet wet in, and they started getting scared at the very, very last minute and decided to pull the plug on the whole deal. And so that was just like my you know, that was my childhood dream up in smoke. You know what I mean? I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm working on this, I'm working on racing on late models and stuff, trying to do the best I can on the West Coast at, you know, places like Ascot, Bakersfield Speedway, Antioch, you know, Pearsonville, a bunch of different races on the or racetracks rather on the West Coast, Saugus Speedway at the good old Benelli Ranch, you know, and doing pretty good, you know, and then the bottom line is the plug gets pulled on the deal, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I was getting pretty old at the time, but I was looking at other guys, you know, and there was other guys that were still in there, like Dale Jarrett. You know, Dale Jarrett was still in there. He was older than me. I think I was 35 years old. I said, well, that old fart's still doing it. You know, I could jump in one, you know what I mean, and make things happen, you know, if they just give me that opportunity, waiting for that opportunity. But you know, with my self-esteem and everything, and me not giving my life and turning my life over the way that I have today, which I'm living the best life that I've ever lived now, you know, I had to put faith in a higher power, you know, who I choose to call God, you know, and do some right thing, you know, start treating people the right way. And I really wasn't doing those things back then, you know. All of those drivers, by the way, they all persevered. Okay, they all persevered, and they might not have made it into cup cars, but besides Billy Lester, he did. You know, Marcus Mallett, he ended up doing a lot of setup stuff and driving for the Winston West Series and some other Xfinity things and stuff like that, and I still talk to him on a regular basis. Willie T. Ribbs, he was pretty much out of it at about that time, but he still ran a couple more IRL shows. I remember seeing him at the Long Beach Grand Prix, you know, and he was still doing pretty decent, you know, at the time. And
that was
Frank
the personality there, right, Dave? He was a personality.
Oh, yeah. Willie was something else. Willie was something else. I'll tell you, you know, the fans weren't ready for Willie. And just my opinion, Willie was a little bit on the arrogant side. You know, he'd go to the track. I remember one race at Saugus Speedway. Okay, they had all the local boys, okay, that are lightning fast, lightning quick fast. Okay, and then they had the superstars to come in, and they did that at and I'm sure that they do that at different tracks, you know, still today. But they brought in Labonte, they brought in Dale Earnhardt, I believe. They brought in a couple of different big name NASCAR guys, okay, and Willie was one of them, you know. And he came down there, and then they had the introduction before the race, and they had a bunch of limousines, you know, with them sticking out of with their head out of the track. And he must have had the most, you know, Willie was a funny guy. Like I said, I and I'll tell it to his face. I think he's an arrogant guy, but he's cool and everything. But, you know, the thing about it is that he just didn't know when to keep his mouth shut when he needed to keep his mouth shut. And
I think he kind of told us that he was not too shy about saying that either. About Willie, he was definitely, I think more or less he was kind of more like a Lewis Hamilton is today, but like you said, the racing world wasn't ready for that at that point in time. So
right.
So you had an opportunity, it kind of faded away. How were you maintaining your presence in racing during that time? Did you get into a local shop, or did you help build? I mean, what was going on after you got turned down for the big leap?
No, what happened was that I was I was running my own shop. It was called Dino Dave's Car Tech and Fuel Injection Specialties, and I'd sell more fuel injection units for all the local guys at the local car shows in California than probably anybody in the country. Okay, specializing in just GM tune ports. And the thing about it was making a boatload of money, and you know, I just threw in the towel. I really didn't want to live anymore. You know, I really didn't want to live anymore. That was my childhood dream that was just went up in smoke. You know, and so for me myself at that time, like I said, I really didn't have any type of spiritual connection for myself. You know, and I wasn't changing because just simply being sober or abstaining from a drink, a line, a pill, or a fix, okay, is not good enough. You have to have something a little bit stronger than that, okay? And for me, I had to find God, you know? And what happened to me is that I ended up losing that shop because I dug deeper in the bag of coke, okay? And I started gambling at a phenomenal rate. And we're not talking about – I'm talking about high-limit blackjack. We're not talking about $50 or $100 a hand. We're talking about, you know, 1,000 $4,000, $5,000 a hand. And whatever I had saved, I just had pissed away. You know, before I knew it, I had to shut the shop down, you know. And
How long did the spiral take? For people that don't know how quickly things can go so south.
Oh, my God.
How long did it take to go from hero to zero?
Let's put it this way. I had a shop in the mid-90s, that was doing on the average $50,000 a month, okay? And I thought I was on top of the world. I had different cars, BMWs, this. I had my late model, you know, and I kind of put the late model deal on the back burner because I'm now working on, you know, coming up with something bigger and better, maybe a Winston West car or something like that, you know. Had a little bit of money saved up in the bank, you know, and then I decided that I could do it again. You know, my self-esteem wasn't there. I decided that, maybe I can go out and sniff some cocaine like a gentleman. You know, for anybody out there, there's no such thing. Okay. There's no such thing with cocaine. If you're an alcoholic drinking like a gentleman, you know, or if you're on meth, you know, there's no such thing as smoking like a gentleman, or that I'm only going to go smoke a 50 this weekend when you have $5,000 in your pocket. It's not going to work. Okay. For me, I had to lose everything. I had lost everything until I found myself on the streets of downtown Las Vegas and downtown Los Angeles, pulling lint out of my pocket, not knowing where I was going to live at, you know. And it was pretty bad and pretty humiliating. I had to finally get a grip of myself, you know. And that period took me probably about 10 years until I got my life back in order, you know, until I wanted to start, you know, being a person again, you know. I ended up, I mean, it got pretty bad to the point that I was riding around on a friggin' bicycle, you know, riding around on a friggin' bicycle with tools in a backpack, you know, telling people that I'm an ASC certified master technician, you know, and didn't want none of them. Yeah. Now, and some of those guys, they'd laugh at it.
That's
but they'd
full
give,
denial,
they,
right?
Yeah, yeah. They'd put me on something if a guy was super hard up at a shop, and you know, hey, let's see if this guy, you know, talks the way he talks, or well, can walk the way he talks. And I'd go in there and I'd fix Mercedes for him or something like that, and get enough money, $200 or $300 in a day, you know, fixing a problem that they're blown away on that I fixed, and go out and spend it. And the next morning, not have enough money to buy a cup of coffee, buy a friggin' cup of coffee, or eat a dime donut. You know what I mean? Because the drugs were controlling my life.
You were the real life suitcase Jake, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, when I said Skid Row, I went down there with a couple of grand on me, and I thought I was going to be a king or something, or a superstar on Skid Row. But I'll tell you, I was broken a few nights, you know. And that's not an experience that anybody ever wants to go through. But drug addiction can take you there. Don't matter how high up on the mountain you are, or how low on the mountain you are, it can take you there.
So you were up at the very top. Now you cruised on down the hill. But at some point in time, something happened, right? Something grabbed a hold of you. Honestly, it had to have been the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, it was that, and that's exactly what it was. You know, I had taken a look at my life and saw the damage that I've done, you know, and how I hurt other people, you know, and how I was just being dishonest with other people, you know, and taking people's money. You know, and it was just crazy. You know, to this day, I'm lucky that I'm still alive. You know, and I believe that my God has forgiven me. You know, and He's given me another chance to do the right thing. And that's how I live today. I try to help another alcoholic and or another suffering addict, and I just try doing the right thing. And I had to switch my addictions, and you guys already know what that is, guerrilla style, baby, okay? In the SCDRA, I've switched addictions, and so my addictions today are racing the front-wheel drive cars, you know, and working and just doing the right thing. Those are my new addictions, you know, trying to do the right thing.
So you left California, you started a new you. Was there any jail time or anything that kind of put you on the right path? What was the awakening moment, Dave? What brought what brought everything crystal clear that you weren't living your life right and that it was time to find a real hobby instead of the actions that you had taken thus far?
Well, you know, in California, you don't even want to consider that jail time. I made numerous trips to jail while I was in California. And the thing about it is California is not like out here in the South. If you do any time in California, okay, for peddly stuff, which most of the time that's what it was for me, driving on a suspended license or, you know, maybe writing a bad check or something like that, or a credit card or something like that, you know, you only get 10% of your time. So, for example, if you get what we call a bullet, which is a one-year sentence, okay, you could be out in 36 days in California. And then the jail populace is so crowded there that they make the light timers, okay, if you get a speeding ticket or driving on a suspended license, you only get you'll only get half of that 10% because they'll make you a trustee. And so on a one-year sentence, you could be out as soon as 18 days. And then if they make you what you call ODR, which is if they put you in the officer's dining room, which is where I was at, okay, then they give you 2-for-1. So you get 2 days for one day that you spend in there. And so you could do a year sentence in 9 days.
That sounds long enough to get the deputy car going faster than everybody else. Is that about right, Dave?
Right. Oh yeah. So you want to commit a crime? You go to California, right? You know, but
yeah. Well, no, because New York is pretty good too. You commit one here and you get bail reform, so we let
well,
you out.
Well, California and New York are a lot more similar than they are not. But we'll save that for another day. So you wind up in Alabama. How the hell did you wind up in Alabama, Dave? We're running on time here, so we're gonna have
okay,
to.
It was Pensacola is where I ended up. Okay, and what happened was a friend of mine from the Army Corps of Engineers. I was working on his cars out there. I started just starting to get my stuff back together in California, selling 5 or 6 transmissions a week. And a guy needed somebody to speak Spanish out here after Hurricane Ivan, and he wanted a supervisor for Operation Blue Roof. And so I had all these Hispanic guys that he could not communicate with, okay, and he needed me to be the translator. And so he'd pay me by the square for me watching these guys, making sure they put enough nails in the roof. And that was it. So that's how I made my transition. He guaranteed me that I would make double or triple the amount of money that I was making in California. And I did. And that didn't help me because I still had the EBGBs on me. In other words, I still wasn't through with my addiction. You know, I came out here, started making between $5,000 to $15,000 a week. Okay, and I ended up getting back in the bag out here and gambling, and then I really went for a tailspin. But yeah, and the bottom line is
something about Hurricane Ivan. Hurricane Ivan completely destroyed Pensacola. People always talk about what happened in New Orleans, but what people don't understand is it was a year before that Ivan come through and completely destroyed Pensacola. They had the National Guard keeping people from being able to go into the city limits. Basically, if you were in Pensacola thereafter the storm, you weren't allowed to go anywhere. You were basically trapped in Pensacola, and they brought a heap of help from all over the United States to help rebuild Pensacola because Ivan was such a devastating storm. Everybody remembers Katrina. Nobody remembers the older brother, Hurricane Ivan.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I never saw anything like it. I'm from California. We might get a little bit of ground shaking out there from time to time on an earthquake. But when this thing hit and I ended up coming out here, you know, I was on drugs when I came out here, you know, I didn't keep my nose clean. I ended up hitting this place and then start making that kind of money. You know, like I said, on the average 10 grand a week, you know, I just dug further into the bag and start hitting the casinos. I was at the damn casinos in Biloxi when they were still rattled from Katrina as well as, well, they were still rattled from Ivan, and I was still there during the time when Katrina hit them, you know. I just didn't have my stuff together, and I was still, basically, my life was still going in a tailspin into hell at that time.
So, Dave, I'll give you one or two options here. We can either bring you back next week, or we can get a short description of how you wound up in the front wheel drive racing community and how you've been able to grow from there. What do you want to do? You want to come back next week and give us another 30 minutes, or do you want to try to sum up things pretty quickly?
Well, I mean, you know, just in short, okay, it took jail time for me, okay? It took jail time for me out here in good old Santa Rosa County, okay? And I was just dreaming the whole time I was in there. That's when God came to me and said, hey, you don't have to keep doing this to your life, you know? And that's the best place for God to come to you, if you ask me, is why you're in jail, because you don't have nothing else to do except read Bibles and stuff in there, you know? And I'd get on my knees on a daily basis. I'd start drawing pictures on my little late model and all that other kind of stuff. And then I said, how am I going to get back in racing? I'm asking myself this. And then I got invited to Southern Speedway to a late model show. And I saw these little ugly little cars, you know, and they're front wheel drive. I go, man, I need to get one of these guys and go smoke these guys. So I went out there my very first race, and I ended up leading it, and I ended up finishing second place, you know. Another guy gave me a chance to race prior to that, and I got back in the bag. I still wasn't finished at the Snowball Derby, but I finished second behind the five-time track champion there named Kelly. His name is Kenny Williams. Okay, a guy named Rocky Boyd gave me a chance at a street stock, and then that's all it took. That's all it took. I had to get racing back in my blood. I knew which way I wanted to go after that. And then I come to find out about these guys. Somebody mentioned, oh, there's a big race for $12,000. So, you know, I'm all pumped up now. After I pull off this second place finish, I'm all pumped up at Southern Speedway. And so, I'm capable of making this $12,000 at this other place, but they didn't tell me that they were going to be the fastest guys in the world that race in the SCDRA. And so I went out there, and that's been a part of the story, the whole deal, and getting better and better at the SCDRA. We just posted a top 10 finish at the Winter Freeze, the granddaddy of them all, $15,000 to win. I posted a top 10. We started at the very, very back. And, I love all the guys from SCDRA. I love all you guys that follow me and stuff like that. And we're going to be back. We're just waiting for this damn coronavirus to get lifted, and we're itching to go racing, guys. And I want to thank you guys for, asking me to be here. And, yeah, I'd be more than honored to come back next week or whenever you guys would like me to come on back.
Yeah, no, we can schedule you again for next week. We can dig a little bit deeper into the story of Dave Smoot. I was searching for a guest for next week anyway. So this will actually give me a break and actually be able to bring on somebody in a couple of weeks here. We'll just bring you back. And we'll talk about your trip to Texas. I think you went out to the Texas
Devil's
Speedway.
Bowl.
Devil's Bowl. Yeah, that was kind of like the opening, right, where people realized, hey, this whole endurance-style racing is actually pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Good old Brad Dixon. Of Big Race Promotions puts on a hell of a show. If he has to pay that out of his pocket, he does it. He's a teacher, and Brad's been putting on that show for several years. When I got out there, and they mix it up, they put everybody in one damn soup bowl. Okay, we're talking about from the front wheel drives. You could be racing against a sprint car, a late model, a street stock, a demolition derby car, and that Devil's Bowl 600. Okay, it's really an exciting race if you could survive it. We were doing pretty darn good, and then we were going through some lap traffic, and about 10th place took out our radiator, and that ended the night for us. But, yeah, we got to go back there and see Brother Brad Dixon, man. And that's one of the biggest races in the country. It pays $30,000 to win that, baby, okay? $15,000 a night. There's two sectors, a Friday night sector, 300 laps, and a Saturday night sector that's another 300 laps. And if you win both of them, I think he throws in an extra bonus five on top of it, making it a total of $35,000 to win.
That's a lot of moolah. Dave, it's great having you on. Get ready. We're going to bring Dave back next week. Same time, we're going to finish out the story, give him another 30 minutes, and enjoy getting to know Dave Smoot and his passion for front-wheel drive racing. Thanks, Dave, for coming on. We're looking forward already to next week's show, man. get with me during the midweek so we can talk about a few things, okay?
Hey, thank you, guys, and God bless.
All right, yes, God bless you, too. All right. We're race fans. That was Dave Smoot. I'm telling you, there's a lot into this guy right here. We're not going to be able to cram it all in 30 minutes. That's my fault. But we're going to bring him back next week, and we're gonna finish out the conversation. I'm so sorry, Craig Moore. I think we went over about almost 8 minutes in this interview. So, Craig, without further ado, man, I'll turn things over to you, bud.
All right. I don't know if Andrew's in the studio or no. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen anything from CJ. But, Andrew, are you there?
I have multiple people in the studio. I need to know what the last four is so I know who to put in the studio. Or he needs to press one so I know which one is him.
Andrew, press one.
Yeah, that's right. Press one.
Hello? He's in the studio now.
All right, there we are. All right, so first and foremost, I don't know how much of that last interview you listened to, Andrew, but you might want to listen next week. This is going to be a barn burner. That's going to be a barn burner next week. Want to introduce? I've known Andrew, good Lord, since 2013. He was a snot-nosed little kid. No, he was a good kid. And he has turned into a fine, fine, upstanding young man. He's a volunteer firefighter here in the, I think you're in Fort Johnson, are you not?
Town of Mohawk.
Oh, Town of Mohawk. He's a volunteer firefighter. He drives senior slingshots at Glen Ridge, and where else?
I'm planning to go to Kroger Creek this coming season, if we get
a
season.
And Kroger Creek, he's going to race up at Tommy Varin's place. This coming year. So, and Tommy's going to be on with us next month. So, Andrew, why don't you tell us, you and I were talking off air via Messenger, why don't you tell us how you got started, how your love of racing developed, and then you've got a very, and Chris might like this, you've got a very odd hobby. I don't know if you're still doing it because I haven't seen much on Facebook about it, but you know what I'm talking about. They tend to block traffic and put gates down. You're a big train enthusiast. But why don't you tell us how you got started in racing and whatnot?
Well, I grew up going to Fonda when I was younger. My mom worked on a couple of the cars, and I ended up getting named after AJ and Mike Romano. So growing up at the track kind of got me into it. We ended up moving south for a couple of years, and down in Kentucky, you cannot find a race car if you threw a baseball through a field. So we ended up moving back here, and that's when me and you met.
Right.
And got back to going to Fonda, and then I kind of got the itch to want to try it. Well, I found a car. Well, I heard about slingshots through Kevin George. And
yep.
I got into a Facebook group, found a car, and... Hackettstown, New Jersey. Went down one day, looked at it, fell in love with it, put a down payment on it. And then my mom ended up funding the whole $3,000 to pick up the car. Picked up the car that December, brought it home. And then from then on, it's been quite a roller coaster.
So that was what? That was what? 3 years ago you did that, right?
Yeah, I bought
three,
it
in
16.
4 years ago.
Yeah,
and you've had some trials and tribulations with that car over the last 4 years. I mean, I watch on Facebook, and you work a full-time job, you're a volunteer firefighter, and you're trying to put this car together in the off season. What are some of the biggest struggles you're facing as far as, well, now you've got this investment. Now, because of this COVID-19, we're not running anywhere. I mean, Glen Ridge isn't supposed to start running. It wasn't supposed to start running, I think, until late April. But you were all ready to go to the car show a few weeks ago. Last week we had Derek McGrew on, junior and senior. And they were all ready to go. They had theirs all just about loaded in the trailer, and then they got the phone call. How How ready for you were the car for the car show were you when you got the phone call?
Well, the first car was ready for Cody Blue to take to Syracuse for indoor. I no sooner rolled it out of the garage getting ready to put it in the trailer when I got a phone call saying that they canceled the race. The second car, the body was dropped off, and I could have had it the night before, and the car was ready to roll right in. But it kind of sucked. I had both cars ready for what they had to do, and then everything kind of changed last second.
All right. Now, growing up, who were – I mean, you obviously mentioned AJ and Mike Romano, but who else were some of your racing heroes that, that you –
When I was younger, I used to always like watching Matty D, and then between him, AJ, and probably Dave Lape were my favorite three.
Okay.
Dave Blaney?
I'm gonna, no, Lape. Chris got all excited. Chris got all excited. It doesn't take much for Chris, though. He's old.
Well, no, I mean, you just don't know too many Dave Blaney fans. I mean, that's what I know. You got a lot of Dale Blaney, but not very many Dave Blaney fans. So that would caught me off guard. Sorry about that.
No, go ahead, Chris. You got any questions for this young man? He's and be easy.
Oh, I
on
mean,
him.
Absolutely.
Be
of
easy
course.
On him because we just broke his cherry tonight. He's never done an interview before.
He's never done an interview before. So I mean, welcome to Race Chat Live. We're a couple of idiots that try to talk about racing for an hour and a half every Thursday night. Other than that, it's nothing special. You don't have to worry about too many people listening in or even messing up because, to be honest with you, we don't do this for the listeners. We do it because, I don't really know why we do it other than we love to talk racing. So that probably is a connection in that we have with you, Andrew. Obviously, you love racing enough to go out there and spend some money doing it. What is it that you're trying to get out of racing? What is that? What are you feeding yourself for? The adrenaline?
I don't know. I just enjoy doing it on the weekends. It's something better than, you know, sitting on the couch watching TV like everybody else. And
so
there's just something
before.
About, yeah, I used to. There's something about sitting in the hot pit right before your feature, you know, trying to calm your nerves, waiting to go out and, you know, over the race, see where you hear, you know, two to go, white flag, all right, go out to the track. It's definitely an adrenaline rush.
Well, first off, like every racer out there, he has got a wonderful supporting girlfriend, and so that helps quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, so
when
he says he doesn't want to sit home, he doesn't want to sit home
in the car, or does she bring you sandwiches, or is she one of those that'll change a tie rod for you? Explain, because Craig opened the door here.
She helps on the car probably more than a lot of people do.
She's all of the above.
She's come to the point where she can take the car all the way apart and put it back together.
What?
And
you need to marry
like,
her,
I'll tell her to. I could tell her to do something, and I could be on the other side of the car, have to run outside real quick. I'll come back, and you know she's halfway dug right through it, taking care of it. I could be at work and you know forget to do something the night before and have a race that night. I'll get a hold of her, say, hey, can you take care of this? Get this done. Get that done. And I come home, car's ready to go 100%. It's definitely a blessing.
I hope ain't nobody listening tonight because you're going to have a lot of people staring at your pit side when you go to when you go back to the races. And they're not going to be looking at you, my friend. They're going to be hiring their next
car surprise.
Team.
There's a surprise coming this year. I picked up a second car, and she's going to take it out for a couple nights.
That's awesome.
Wow. So you're sharing the passion. And more ways than one. I mean, you brought her in. First of all, you're not really from racing, right? You told me you were on the couch a few years ago. So maybe you were a little bit in, but now you're fully in. You've got a girl who supports you 100%, who will put the car back together for you. Now you're gonna let her become a driver herself. Now you're gonna open the opportunity for her to drive. Man, you got it going on, brother.
Thank you.
You got the whole package, my friend. So, what are your plans? I'm optimistic. I mean, I'm a very optimistic person. What are your plans going forward? Because obviously, we're not like them in the South. They started racing again in January, so they got a couple of races in before they had to stop. We haven't started up here yet. What are your plans for 2020? Obviously, you said the Memphis is going to run the second car, but what are your plans, goals going forward for 20?
Well, I want to try to run for points this year. I was doing great last year. Right before my wreck, I was 17 points off of fifth place at Glenridge.
Yeah.
And then I wrecked the car, didn't get enough time to get it back in, you know, racing condition. By the time I did, I tried to have a sub go and save my little run and got denied a sub. So that kind of shot down all my ambition.
Now, why did they deny your sub?
The reasoning was it's an unfair advantage to have a sub run your car for points.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I kind of just took a step back for a little while, got the car prepped, went to Malta, ran there, and then I really wasn't ready to get back into it after, you know, what I went through. So I pulled off early, put it on the trailer, and ended up just going home. And I left it in the garage for probably a month, month and a half. I didn't even go and look at it. But here I sit, two cars, ready to go. You know, everything's going to be fresh this year. You know, both motors are going to get rebuilt, the whole nine. I'm ready to go.
Well, I may have missed this part of the story. I had to step away for a sec for a howling dog. anybody that listens to Race Chat Live knows that's a reoccurring occurrence just about every weekend. So you were in a filthy, nasty wreck. Is that what happened?
Yeah, August 4th at Glenridge. It was probably one of the best nights we've had with the car. I got a new crew chief this year. What?
That's the way it always starts. It was a great night and everything was going perfect, and then all of a sudden.
Oh well. When we got to the track, I didn't have the clutch nor the chain on the car. So I got there a little early to get it rushed to get, you know, out there. And this year I ended up picking up a new crew chief who's turned the car around 110%. And through all this, we've became best friends. Well, he finally got the car set up to where it was competitive and I was actually able to just do whatever I wanted with it. So comes to feature time. You know, we were happy, we're excited, you know, we're doing great. And I ended up bobbling going into turn four, so I lost a little momentum on the front stretch. Went into one, got bumped, and the bumper on the left rear side got pushed into the tire and locked up the rear end. I put my feet on the brakes trying to get it to go sideways or, you know, anything but head on, and I was dead set for the wall. I just remember seeing the wall, spinning around at least once, and then when I was trying to shut the car off, my hands were on the rock screen trying to find my off switch, and then I kind of blacked out on the way to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how
did you hit the wall wide open?
I was on the brakes. I tried to kill the car right before I hit it, but I was already in, you know, no man's land.
And you don't remember much after that other than waking up in the hospital.
Yeah, fractured elbow, concussion, severe bruising, and then it really hurt to walk for like 2 or 3 days.
A lot of times we hear, you know, well, I woke up and the first thing I asked Doc was, when can I go racing again? That wasn't so much the story for you, right? I mean, you kind of had maybe a sense of reasoning there, you know, maybe some second thoughts.
Well, when we tried to refit the seat in the new chassis because I completely folded the current car, they put me in the seat, they put the helmet on me, and I was sitting there so we could get the seat lined up to get the car back together, and I immediately couldn't, like, something hit me where just having the helmet on my head and seeing the screen, just, I had to get out of the car. I couldn't even sit there long enough for them to mark where the seat had to be.
Wow.
And then you watched Talladega Nights and you got your gorillas back, right?
I'm not really sure what got me back into it. But
had to have been Talladega Nights, right? Did you get into a car with a cheetah in it? I mean that's did your dad put some Lucky Charms up underneath there and call the cops on you? Tell us about what really got you back in the race car, man.
when I hit the wall, like on top of my hood, I have a memorial for my uncle who was killed 3 years ago in an accident. Well, when I hit the wall, that piece folded up perfectly right against my rock screen, and I opened my eyes to see his name first. So that kind of was, you know, in a way a sign of, you know, it's not time to do anything yet. So yeah. I left that hung up on the wall in the garage as I rebuilt the car, and that, most of all, that's kind of been my motivation throughout this whole thing. The first car I got was going to be a surprise for him because he supported me through everything. And I had it hidden for the car show in March, and he was killed on February 11th of 2017. He never got to see the car, and I beat myself up over that, you know, constantly. So, I mean, in a way, it's kind of for him with most of this.
So your motivation really comes through your uncle there. That's a beautiful story. And so one of the only things you really remember from the wreck is seeing the memorial hood right there in your face. I could see how that psychologically that can really give you a run for your money. I've had psychological experiences as well, just not necessarily in a race car, more of a actual life experience. But I can see where that really kind of left you questioning what you were doing. But as you've got the car put together, you're obviously wanting to get back in. But then you had that slight moment of doubt when you put your helmet on. Was that just kind of reliving the experience, or kind of walk us through that right there?
I had a GoPro on the car the night I wrecked, and I watched the tape a couple times just trying to figure it out. And every time it was just kind of, you know, all right, that's enough. Yeah, I can't really keep reliving it. But I was just trying to figure out the whole thing behind, like, you know, basically I wanted to dig deeper and just look at what actually happened. And to today, I still don't understand it. But I've learned one thing. It is what it is, you know. If you don't step up and keep moving forward, you're never going to get anywhere.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing about racing, Craigmore, I think you know as well, anything can happen. And so a lot of times, you know, your right front brake, something happens, maybe you pop a tire, a wheel come off. You know, there's so many things that can create a wreck. And then there's those wrecks that should have never happened in the first place. You don't really have an explanation of what happened. And so that kind of allowed a little bit of doubt and fear to obviously build up. But, Andrew, it looks like and it sounds like you're pretty motivated now to put all that behind you and stretch it out again, right? Have you gone racing since, or is this going to be your first time back?
The first time back, I went to Malta for their special event with us, and then I hung it up for the off season. I put Cody Blue in the car for the indoor events at Allentown and Atlantic City. So other than a couple laps at Malta, just to shake down the new car, this will be my first time actually back racing, you know, full time, if you'd say.
Awesome. Craig, I tell you what, you know, between the interview with Dave and the interview with Andrew, you know, we always find similar stories, right? It seems like almost a match made to have Dave on and then to have Andrew on, because both of them have this life-changing experience story. And maybe that was a positiveness that come out of tonight. Never really know where life's going to take you and in what direction it's going to take you, but you learn to evolve, right? You learn to live again. You learn to become a better person. You become more knowledgeable, become more sensible. And I think that as we were searching for the heart of tonight's show, I think perseverance is what comes to mind. You know, you push on. You struggle through it. And it sounds like both guys have fallen back to racing. It's what's gotten them. It's what keeps their time. I mean, nobody can complain when your girlfriend or your wife gets down on the dirty floor and helps you pull a transmission, or helps you change a tie rod, or helps you do anything to set up on a race car. That is the ultimate oblivion. I mean, that's the. You know you're doing it right when you have a girl that supports that 100%. It just tonight's been pretty captivating on both of our interviews. Andrew, such a great story, man.
Thank you.
No, it was very good. And he and I were talking while you were interviewing Dave. And he said, Craig, I'm very anxious. He says, I'm very nervous. And I said, relax. I said, it's going to be me. I said, you're going to talk to me. You're going to talk to Chris. I said, and you just, here's what I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to tell you, and you're going to run with it. So you did a phenomenal job. You did
Thank
a phenomenal
definitely,
job. And we definitely, will
definitely a lot
share this out. Yeah, you did awesome.
And so many times I come off as, you know, the one who talks the most in these shows, and I'm very sorry about that. I am the Larry King of racing radio, because I'm never scared to ask a question, and even if the question sounds dumb, I'm hanging on to every word that you're saying. So, you know, I'm captivated by the stories that we hear week in, week out from drivers, and hopefully we got the story out here tonight as well.
Now, run down before we let you go, because I know you had a long 14-hour day at prison. I mean, work. Run down some of your sponsors before you eat dinner and hit the hay.
Oh, this year, my main returning sponsor is EMTSNY. They've helped me over the past 3 years, and trust me, it's been great having them with me. My brother came on with Miltard Motorsports. That's his little thing he's got going. And he's been putting a lot of time and money into the cars for me, which I appreciate. Tank Motorsports, Frank Veter, and then Tri-Valley Alarms for this year. But without them, it wouldn't really, you know, be as easy. So
now, what does it
a big
cost
thank
you
to
a
them.
Season? Absolutely. What? One more question. What does it cost you a season to run that car? Roundabout.
A small fortune. That's not really that bad. I mean, fuel doesn't really play a factor. Tires don't play a factor. It's literally, if anything, you know, oil changes, clutch shoes, and, you know, a chain here and there. So, I mean, a season, like, not including admission fees, this and that, I'd say at max $1,000.
That's not bad at all. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. Yeah. You get me an advertising package put together and get it over to
you
me.
Got
I'll
a
see
bus.
What I can do. You'll see. I'll
you
see what I
bus.
Can do.
You got
all right, because I've known you. Sir?
What'd
you say?
Oh, I just said you got a bus.
Oh, all right. Yeah, you get it over to me. I'll see what I can do. I've known you forever, and I believe in you. And, maybe we'll even get the car out to a couple of events I got once we get back to playing again. Because once we get back to playing, you'll get back to racing. So, all righty.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I want to thank you for joining us. Chris, anything final before we let him go and eat Kimberly's wonderful food and take a shower and go to bed?
I always have to pull that last one out of the hat, and this time it's where did your car number come from? What's your car number, and where did it come from?
Oh, that one's a given. 16, and it's after AJ Romano.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, well, we're going to let you go. Go ahead.
It's just been one of those kind of numbers that stuck with me from when I was little. Like, anytime I'd play any type of sport, I always try to get 16. Anytime I did anything, that was the number I went for. So it's fitting.
Cool. So it was you played baseball, you played basketball. What sports were you in before racing?
Soccer was my main goal, and, you know, that's where I basically grew up going. I made it a traveling team down south until I fractured L5 of my back and couldn't play anymore.
Oh, man. Ouch. Well, that's a whole other story that we could get into. We're a sports station first and foremost, so maybe that'll open the door for another interview. Andrew,
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being on tonight. We look forward to kicking off the 2020 race season. Of course, everybody's in hiatus as we battle this COVID-19 quarantine, self-quarantine, social distancing. I'm very positive that life's going to get back to normal pretty soon here. We have now been reported as the most infected nation. That's not positive to hear.
New York is the most infected state, so go ahead.
They said it would get worse before it got better, and hopefully we're in the peak of it now, and things will kind of taper off, and we can get some racing back going. I know every dirt track in the South is ready to go racing. I'm pretty sure up north as well. So we're going to hope for the best and continue to pray and believe in our president, and hope that Easter weekend we can start opening back up the economy. Andrew, thanks again for coming on. We'll have to schedule you again later in the season to find out how things are going for you. But until then, man, thanks and thanks for being on Race Chat Live.
Anytime. Thank you. It was
all right.
Definitely an experience.
All right. Awesome. We'll talk to you later, my friend. Be good.
Yeah, the next interview hopefully will be in Victory Lane, right? Because have you got you some victories yet?
Not yet. I kind of got a break enough.
All right. Well, that one's going to come when you get you're going to get a victory interview, and then we're going to have you on the following week and find out how you did in your victory interview. How about that?
Sounds like a deal to me. Thank you.
All right. With Ward's music sponsored on the side of that race car, Craig Moore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Go get some food.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
That'll conclude our live version through Facebook Live of our interviews. You can continue to listen to the show as we close it out here on the link that's through our page. But thank you guys for listening, and then we'll try to do the Facebook Live again next week. All righty. So let's get down to business.
All right,
I
don't know, man. I've figured out that I know more people through social distancing than I thought I did. I know
I think I need to explain.
Well, because people message, how are you doing during this social? I was doing great till you messaged me, leave me alone, you're too close.
So you're enjoying the self-quarantine a little bit more than us.
Yeah, I mean, I am. I mean, I'm going nuts because I haven't DJed in a month, but, you know, it's given me time to work on things that I need to work on business-wise. I haven't stopped promoting. I don't know if you've seen the new promotional video I put together the other day, but, you know, I'm enjoying it somewhat, but I'm ready for the racing to start back. I'm not real thrilled about this whole iRacing thing. It looks cool, but as we said earlier in the opening monologue, it had 1 million viewers this past Sunday. It may have 1 million more this week, but, you know, it's not
cool for an iRacing video.
Well, yeah.
YouTubers be going crazy over that, but I don't care which way you try to swing it. It doesn't replace the danger aspect or the entertainment aspect.
No, who led the most laps? Was that William Byron?
I don't even know.
William Byron led the most laps, and then he wrecked. His hand slipped off the steering wheel. I don't know if that's what really happened, but he ended up wrecking, and somebody came in front of him. And Jimmy Johnson wrecked on the second lap, I think. So, you know, maybe he better stick to the real thing because this season's looking better than his iRacing season.
Oh, and I've got a big, big, big prediction for Jimmy Johnson. I'm so glad that you said it because you know that if I've said this much, I'm ready to tell it. Jimmy Johnson.
All right.
We'll come back in the 2021 race season as a member of Richard
the
Childress.
The Fox Racing team. No.
No, Richard Childress Racing. Tell it or sell it, guys. Tell it or sell it. What are we going to do? Are we going to sell it or are we going to tell it?
Oh, man. Oh, I don't know.
He's putting the retirement on hiatus, and here's how I know, Craig Moore. He is questioning, like I said, like we opened up, I thought 46% of the proposals for the people that were supposed to be married in this time of quarantine have now had a chance to second guess what they are doing. And I'm leading it right into this. Jimmy Johnson has had to sit out of a race car for the last 4 weeks. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it seems like forever. He's had a chance to find out if he really likes racing or not, dude. And
oh, I thought you were going to say a chance to find out if he really liked married life.
Oh, no, 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 no. That's you're the one that loves to pull up the girlfriends and all the married life and all that other stuff. I try not to be so personal, but I should have talked to you about that during the off season. But anyway, besides the point, we'll cross that bridge later. Seriously, Jimmy Johnson has had a chance to sit back and say, wow, I really want to go racing. Well, how can you really want to go racing now? And then at the end of the year, oh, yeah, I'm done. Wait a minute.
Right.
What brought Michael Jordan back through 3 retirements? What brought Mark Martin back from never retiring? Right? It was his passion. It was his, I want to go racing. He wants to go racing. And I believe his ride's already gone. Brad Keselowski's done signed on the bottom line. You can throw rocks at me if you want to, but you can kick rocks if you don't believe me. That ride is gone. Being a Chevrolet guy, that Jimmy Johnson is. Does he go to JTG, which is secondhand equipment from Hendrick? Does he go to CGR, which is secondhand equipment from Hendrick? If he feels like he can still win, he will make Richard Childress Racing great again, and his teammate's going to be none other than Tyler Reddick. I mean, talk about awesome for Tyler to be able to learn from Jimmy Johnson, a 7-time champion. Of course, that would give Richard Childress, what, 8? No, it would give him 7 championships because he was only missing one from Dale Earnhardt, and that was the championship that Dale's first championship. So now
right.
You give Richard Childress a chance to have 7 championships. You get Jimmy Johnson a chance to have 8 championships. If I'm Richard Childress, I am basically sliding the checkbook to Jimmy Johnson and saying, you name your price. Because if not, and Jimmy Johnson really wants to race next year, his only other option is to create a multi-team the similar way that Tony Stewart did, Stewart Haas Racing. And I just don't think the further we get along, Tony had that planned a year and a half in advance. He knew what he was doing the moment Joe Gibbs went to Toyota. Tony Stewart started trying to find his way out of Joe Gibbs Racing because Tony Stewart was a Chevrolet guy. Now, would Chevrolet not just own it up? Would they just not love the fact that they're going to have 2 powerhouse stables again, one with Jimmy Johnson and one with Hendrick Motorsports? Bringing Richard Childress from the depths of nothing back up to the top again. Tell it or sell it, Craig Moore.
I would have to agree with you, I guess. I mean,
so you're selling it. You're selling it. You're saying this is the best thing since sliced bread, and that's, of course, the Joey Logano. Because tell it would
no,
mean
it's Joseph
you're telling
Logano.
Me how crazy and wrong that I am, right? I mean, that's kind of the game here. That's the way this game is works. So you're selling it. You're saying, look, this sounds logical.
Does it? Yes, because then that gives someone for Childress to pass the torch to.
Because the show ain't going to be the campaign.
Yeah, no. No, his grand boys can't run. His grand boys only claim to fame is that slide across Daytona.
But why are you going to let him drive the number 3, too? Yes, yes, if he wants to drive the number 3, Jimmy Johnson can drive the number 3. Oh, wow. Come on now, producer, Mr. CJ Sports. I know you want in on this one.
He's probably sleeping.
That asshole.
He's probably tucking himself into bed because he gets up at 2:30.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, he missed the hot take of the week.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. We'll have to put that up. I'll have to see what Facebook did with the polls, and I'll have to create a poll tomorrow morning and put it up. Do you really think Jimmy Johnson will?
Like the Keselowski conspiracy. everybody's going to jump on board with it. I mean, I was the first to say that Brad Keselowski is going to be at Hendrick Motorsports next year. And I said William Byron was going to have more wins at Hendrick Motorsports this year than anybody. That hasn't necessarily come to fathom yet. But, I mean, sometimes we hit and miss. Of course, my worst miss so far is Kyle Larson to Hendrick Motorsports. You know, and I really don't think it's Kyle Larson, guys. I really don't. I think it's Brad Keselowski. And I think a lot of this has to do with his outside influence of other than cup racing. And it's just kind of a no-no there. So, you know, if he wants to win, my impression with Kyle Larson is if you want to win a cup championship, you go to Hendrick, okay, because he's going to be able to give you the resources to win a championship. But if I'm Jimmy Johnson, I play my cards right, and I get manufacturing support to Richard Childress, and I get to stay under that Chevy emblem, I get to race for an eight-time – I get to race for already six-time champion car owner, and I get to do it in the number three, and I get a chance to win my eighth championship in the number three, man, in the number three. I know it's probably wild to think that he would actually be in the number three car, but, you know, that's putting somebody who deserves the ride in their place, right? Because the first thing we all say was, Austin Dillon in the number three? Come on. Let Dale drive it. Hell, I know Dale, and I love Dale, but let Jimmy Johnson race that number three over there at Richard Childress race. You were no fun tonight. You sold it. You couldn't tell it. You had to sell it.
Yeah, no, I could see it happening. I mean, but you are 0-for-1.
How?
You are going to be – how? You said
yeah.
Kyle Larson.
Oh, my gosh. When you're in the business of making predictions, you're going to miss. You're going to miss some.
But right, but you don't want to miss your first one, for Christ's sake. You were so sure of it. You
no,
were talking
no, no.
about
we'll
it.
Back, we'll go pull up an article from 2015 where I predicted Joey Logano to wind up at Penske. I knew that Joey Logano was at his end at Stuart Haas, I mean, at Joe Gibbs Racing. And I wrote an article that said that first of all, Ryan Blaney would be one of the hot shoes in years to come. And also, at that time, he was driving for Tommy Baldwin Racing, may I add. And that Joey Logano was going to blossom at another home. And that home could possibly be a place like Penske. Because if you remember, at that time, Kurt Busch had left Penske Racing. A.J. Allmendinger was actually in the car. And then A.J. Allmendinger got fired mid-season because of a failed drug test. And so that white ride was wide open to bring in somebody big, and I've kind of pinned Joey Logano to go there. So, no, I may be wrong on some, but I may be right on a few, but who's really keeping score? You like how I dug myself out now, did you?
Yeah. Typical politician wannabe, dig himself out of a hole after he puts himself in it.
Yeah, buddy. You know, is that Mr. CJ Sports? I heard him laughing, or was that just figment of my imagination?
No, that was a snoring you heard.
Oh, it's hopeful. Full reasoning, right? Damn it.
Yeah.
Well,
so are
you
going to sit and watch the iRace this Sunday?
Yeah, I have nothing better to do, to be honest with you, Craig Moore. I have absolutely nothing better to do.
Well, you might get some Grubhub orders.
No, I don't do that on the weekends, man. I'm a Monday through Friday guy. I'm the kind of guy that buttons up a polo, wear some nice slacks. I dress, you know, for the occasion. I'm not like a teenager or a 20-year-old who goes out there wearing, you know, swimming trunks and a tank top, white beater. And expect that I'm going to get a good tip when I deliver the food. No, I take the high standard there. So I do a lot of Monday through Friday. I do a lot of lunch deliveries. I take care of the business people. Those are the kinds of people I really enjoy are the business people because I like making their day. I like being able to bring them lunch and saying, hey, here you go. Here's your treat, you know. Thanks for the tip. Now, the night guys, they do a lot of apartment complexes, and, of course, you know, you can only imagine a lot of residential areas. I kind of prefer the daytime where I'm mainly just doing it to business. Now, I tell you, the business that we've had the last few weeks has been, of course, residential business. residential areas. Not so many businesses have been opened, so we've kind of seen that. But we've taken a drastic pay cut as well right now. I'm down in revenue by about 70%. If I told you how much I made at DoorDash, you would probably be cranking up that truck of yours, going down there and trading it for something that gets about 45 miles to the gallon, like my wife's car does. And and we'd meet somewhere in the middle, you know, because it's
the Cadillac?
No, we traded the Cadillac in, Craig. That thing was enough problems. I got the wife of one of them Kia Fortes, with the extended warranty on it. So
that's the way to do it.
Yes, definitely for sure. And like I said, we just kind of enjoy doing the daytime services. I don't know how it is up north. Nighttime is just totally different people, and I like to be at home with my kids and enjoying the life and luxuries of people who take care of business. You know, my wife and I, we own our own home. We have two vehicles in the yard.
Are they on
block? She has a job for 10 plus years. I have a hobby that's just the most awesome hobby in the world. I get to talk about racing. I get to go to a racetrack to call races, and then I get to deliver food Monday through Friday. Really, I've got the perfect lifestyle, my friend.
Well, I'll tell you what. Not to brag, but you gonna loan me $50,000?
I want the kids to go to the University of Alabama, Craig. So if they decide to go to community college instead of the university, maybe we can talk about that then.
Okay.
I don't know about you. After looking at the stock market this past week. I maybe need to borrow some money from you.
I'm righteous.
No, we're on the rise again. It's already went from 18,000 points on Friday. We're all the way back up to 2,200. I really think, not to get too much in the economics of stuff, I think a third of the United States basically shut down at the beginning of this, and that affects the stock market. Now that we're about into this, we've kind of settled down here. The grocery stores have picked up where a lot of other places have fallen, like the restaurant business. A lot of people have gotten laid off. A lot of people unsure where and how to spend their money. But I think right now we can really figure out that entertainment is about an eighth or sixth of the global income, right? I've seen a well enough drop out of the stock market to know that the entertainment business itself had a huge stock market, along with the restaurants as well. So hotel industry, restaurants, and entertainment, that was damn near, Craig, a third of our economy.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen, it's 9:24. I don't know who's running in the iRace this weekend. I don't really care. It'll probably be the same.
He got cheated. I almost said a bad word. He got cheated out of the last race. I think that he pulled over because he didn't want to get he knew Denny Hamlin was going to wreck him because that's just who Denny Hamlin is. And Dale dove to the bottom to keep from finishing basically, I guess, 18th or so, whatever it would have been, because he would have. I know iRacing, he would have sat there and spun, just around and around and around and around and around until all the cars passed. So, I don't blame it for Dale. Of course, the virtual world and the real world stood up and screamed when Dale Jr. took the lead, just like always. And who knows? Dale Jr. announced this week that that they're going to have another child. So how about that, Dale Jr.?
45 years old, going to have another kid. God bless
him. Oh, my God. I mean, man, what were they thinking, dude?
Yeah, well, she's in her 30s, so you tell me what he was thinking.
I think she's a little bit – I think she's right at the 40-year mark. I'm not sure she's too far off from Dale's age. But, anytime you have a lady at 40 years old going and having kids at that age is, it's kind of a tougher time than it's. For say a 25-year-old.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll have them in our thoughts and prayers. But obviously they have the greatest diets in the world. They have the greatest doctors in the world because they have a lot of money, and so they're well taken care of on that end as well. But we'll still keep them in our thoughts and prayers. We got another show next week, Craig. Tell us about who's coming on next week.
Well, Dave Smoot's going to come back and join us, and we don't have a second guest lined up. For Dave, well, after Dave, so Dave runs over, it's not a big deal.
All right. Well, it sounds like next week is going to be Dave's hour then. Thank you for listening to Race Chat Live. We enjoyed it. If you listen to the podcast here tonight, you know, you're one of the lifers. You're one of those that continue to support us. I wish that you would tell us who you are, because there's about 10 listeners every week to listen to the show, but we just don't know who the hell y'all are because y'all never talk back to us. But I don't know if y'all listened
well, we
for 26
last week.
26, man. That's what I'm talking about. Boy, oh boy. I remember the days when I used to get have 1,000 people listening to the radio show. I don't know if people just don't like me anymore. I actually called out earlier in the week if I could get some old timers maybe to come on and talk about the good old days of racing. And it was as silent I just didn't get any feedback from it. So honestly, I don't care if people like me or not. I've been doing this for a long time, and I enjoy what I do, and I don't do it because I want to be somebody famous. I do this because I love to talk about racing and get an outlet to do that. But anyway, if by chance you are an old-timer and have a good old story and you want to come on Race Chat Live, we can plug you in at any time, 718-664-9861. Just make sure you press 1 to talk to the host, and we'll get you in here, and we'll let you talk about racing. But, Craig, so you've got you're on standstill right now. You're in the most dangerous state right now in the country. Have you known anybody personally that's had the coronavirus?
No, but I do know someone that has the symptoms. The test has not come back yet. Actually, it is my brother Patrick out in Spokane, who is a first responder EMT. So
wow.
He is living in quarantine.
So all the way on the other side of the United States.
Yeah, we've had
another
hotbed here. We have no real hotbed cases up here. I think we have 5 in the county next to us and maybe 1 or 2 in the county that I live in. But the majority of it is downstate. And we were talking last night, and I said, well, here's what I think. I said, the reason that New York City has so many cases is what do they have there? They have subways. You know those damn things don't get clean like they should. Or as somebody called them, rat traps. So I'm guessing that's why that New York City has the number of cases that it has and why New York State is leading the charge on infected people. So if we could just annex New York City from New York State and call it something totally different, we'd get a new governor and we wouldn't have to worry about the coronavirus. You there?
I'm here. Got it. Go. It never fails. The kids come in here and bombard me with a question, but this time they almost. Wait, did you find it? Okay. Searching for HDMI cord. I mean, it's always something, but sorry, I had it on mute there if they were asking me, but yeah, and I think probably the biggest fear right now is those people in New York City, running out to the suburbs, right, and filling your...
Well, yeah, because I just seen earlier today, I was on my way down, I was headed west, and I seen like 17 fifth wheels coming up. And I'm like, you guys... Don't be bringing your shit virus from the city up to here to visit. Stay out of here. So, I mean, the campgrounds are all closed down until further notice. Not that I don't know anybody that want to go camping now, but people are trying to get their fifth wheels up here and get them in place for the season. And so we'll have to see how this plays out.
All righty, well, hopefully y'all will join us next Thursday night as we come back on Race Chat Live. It's been a great evening. Thank you for following us. Like the page. Follow us on Facebook. And a big shout-out to the 110 Nation Sports for giving us a network to work off of. Until next week, we'll hope that you have a great week, and see you next week. Bye.
Good night, everybody.